The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today's episode of The Overwhelmed Brain is brought to you by getoutofthemess.com. If you want to know more about Legal Shield and what it can do for you, give Asha a call at 678-355-8777. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. My name is Paul Coliani. I am a personal empowerment coach, and this is the show where I read your questions and help you tackle life's toughest challenges. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about in this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, now that I got that disclaimer out of the way, let me tell you what I'm here to talk about today. Didn't mean for that to rhyme. Today is about the generalizations that we make sometimes. And in fact, sometimes is sort of an anti-generalization because you can go either way with it, right? The word sometimes. But what about the word always or never or ever or constantly or continuously? These are generalizations, sometimes known as hyperbole, sometimes known as universal quantifiers in linguistics. They're also exaggerated absolutes, or I don't know, I've seen a million different terms for it. But I think it's important to understand that when we use these terms, like he always does that, or he never does that, or she always does that, or she's constantly late. Constantly actually might fit in that same category as sometimes, because constantly, I think that has some room. But continuously, a little stronger, but always, very strong. That is saying that there is never a time when it doesn't happen. I mean, how many times do we use this? Every day. There's another one. Every day. If we use these things every day, which is also an exaggeration, then we are setting up our reality to have beliefs that really don't serve us. Now, I know that we say these things. I say these things to sometimes make a point. Like, you're always late. Even though I know for sure that that person's not always late. But we want to make our point. We want to hyperbolize it and just really drill our point home so the person really gets the intensity that we're trying to convey. Because if we can convey that intensity to someone else, then they will believe us more. Then our emotional state will also be, I don't want to say transferred or projected, but conveyed to them. This is my emotional state, and I'm telling you with all this emotion that this person is always late. So maybe you'll fire them up too, and maybe it'll support your cause, whatever you want to call it, your perception of reality. But this can work against us in so many ways. And there's something that I was taught many years ago, and you've probably been exposed to this teaching as well, where what you say is your reality. I don't always fall for that, what you say is your reality. I do go into a space of what you say can impact your emotional state. What you say can also impact other people's models of reality. And what you say can also impact your own model of reality. Because if you say something like, I'll never have a job that pays me well, or I'll never find an amazing person to share my life with, then if you really believe that, you're setting yourself up for failure and you're setting yourself up for disappointment. In fact, it's not even a setup. You're actually affirming it right then and there. You're affirming your present and future miserable life. And this is why I believe we have to be careful with these terms. I mean, I've worked on this. I've tried to stop saying these things. And it's hard. It is really hard to stop saying always and never and ever and constantly and continuously. And it's hard to remove those words from my vocabulary. I don't know why, but I do know that when I hear myself say it, a little flag comes up and I stop and I question myself and I ask, okay, is that really true? Is she always late? Does she always say that? Does he always give me that look? Is it always? Or is it only certain times? And those are the times that really bug me and affect me. So those are the only ones I'm talking about. And those are the only ones I care about. And that really minimizes every other time that somebody else might have done something in a different way, because all you're doing is choosing to remember those times. So that's not my point today, but the idea behind using these generalizations to create an impact or to make a comment, not only to other people, but to yourself, can lead to present and future misery because you believe things will never change. And that puts you in a very bad position when you create this, what I might call an unreality. It is unreal. It is a fantasy to say, that will never happen. I'm going to say with 99.9% surety that when you say that will never happen, most of the time you are wrong. Most of the time it's just a fantasy. It's an unreal statement. It's an untrue statement. Now it could be true, but you only prove that after you're dead. I hate to say it that way. You only prove that it will never happen after you're dead, which means you'll never prove that it'll never happen. I mean, on your deathbed, I guess you can say, well, I told you it would never happen. Then you might be right. But you have the right to say that on your deathbed. You have the right to say it after you've lived your entire life and you can look back and tell someone, see, I told you it would never happen and it didn't. But to say it ahead of time, without a crystal ball, without knowing the future, and just assuming that it will be that way, you set yourself up for misery. I'm going to get into this a little bit. So the idea behind generalizations is to create an absolute of always and never. I mean, that's not the only idea behind generalizations, but the idea behind these words that I'm using, always, never, ever, they set you up for misery because you put them in your vocabulary to make some sort of point, almost as if to affirm a belief system or affirm how you already feel, as if you wanted to own what you believe. It's a little vague, so let me get into it. For example, how many times have you heard someone say or said to yourself, I'll never find someone like that again. I'll never be with that kind of person again. I'll never find a woman that will treat me like that again, or I'll never find a man that will treat me that way again, or I'll never find anyone that will make me feel happy again. I mean, I've heard that over and over and over again, even in my own life, about my own relationships. And how about, I'll never have a job like that again. That was the best job ever, and I lost it, and I'll never be able to experience that again. Or, I'll never be happy again. I hear these things. People are saying them today. People are listening to this show saying, yes, Paul, it's true. It's true. I've done this for a long time and it's never going to happen. I know it's true. So these are the people I'm talking to. And anyone that's ever said anything like this that actually believes it. Because this is where we get stuck, right? We say, oh, it's never going to happen to me again. And then we believe it. And then our reality is shaped because of those words. We may know logically that, well, I really can't say that's true, but I'm going to perceive reality as if it is true so that I don't get my hopes up, so that I don't be too happy today. I don't want to be too happy today. I don't want to go forward with hope or faith or expectations of anything else. I got to make sure that I set myself up to stay disappointed, to stay in this unhappy state, to stay miserable, so that I don't get my hopes up and I don't actually enjoy life, so that when it doesn't happen, I don't put myself in a place of not enjoying life. So there's some some conflict there, isn't there? Where you put yourself in a state of not enjoying life to the fullest because you know you'll never have something great again. So you keep yourself in this miserable state just because you know that great thing will never happen again. So you don't want to set yourself up for failure. So you stay miserable just so you won't be miserable later. That's really an odd way of thinking of things. I mean, to me, I look at that and it's an odd way to think of, I don't want to be fully happy now because I know I'll never have what I had then. So I'm going to set myself up to be miserable by saying it will never happen again, instead of being hopeful, thinking, well, I can't wait for that to happen again. Or I hope it happens again. I'm looking forward to it. I'm just going to set myself up now to be continually disappointed. There's that word, continually. By saying, I will never be happy again, or I will never meet that kind of person again, or I will never have that kind of job again, or I'll never be in that type of space or situation again. And so we do that, and then we own it, and then our life isn't as good as it could be because we set our future up even though we don't know what our future is. So I could go in circles with this, but I think I made my point, and you probably understand what I'm saying. And if you don't, well, that's what we're talking about. Remember, what you're saying, when you say things like this, you're making up a fantasy. And this fantasy is, it's almost designed to help you validate your current emotional state. And I look at it as a defense mechanism. By doing it, it makes you feel a little bit better because you're validating your current experience. Even though your current experience, you feel bad. But by saying, well, it'll never get better, that self-validation almost feels good. So there's a little conflict that we can create in us too. I mean, not all of us. I'm not trying to generalize, but we have this formula that if it's followed to a T, that if we actually do this formula, if we actually play out this formula, we could be setting ourselves up for day after day of misery because we believe that nothing will ever change. So one of the points I want to make with these generalizations is that you have to remember that the person or the job or whatever thing that you miss is not actually what you miss at all. What you miss is how you feel when you were in that place, when you were with that person or that job or that situation in your life. That's what you miss, how you feel. I mean, you miss the thoughts too, but I remember when my marriage ended that geez, I could take any relationship. When any relationship I had ended, that I can think back to after that relationship was truly over, when I realized, oh crap, there's no going back. She doesn't want me back. And this is basically every relationship I've had. She doesn't want me back. I'm never going to be happy again. I'm never going to find someone like that again. I'm never going to be as happy as I was then. I mean, these are a lot of statements that most of us have probably said at one time in our life. I've said this about every single woman that left me. And after the relationship was over, I was depressed or down or miserable. And I really believed that I would never find someone that would make me feel that way again. Now, I didn't use those words. I said, I will never find someone like her ever again. I will never find someone that I was attracted to like that ever again. I will never find someone that would make me laugh like she did. I said this, and many of you listening have probably said something like this after your relationship ended, but whether it was months or years later, I started another relationship that was, yes, absolutely different than the last, and yes, absolutely made me feel different. She had a different sense of humor. She had different likes. She had different tastes in music, different tastes in food. Almost everything was different. And yet I still experienced feelings of love and happiness and satisfaction. Definitely not in the same way. Every relationship was completely different. And most of my relationships were also fulfilling. So even though I said I will never experience that kind of feeling again, I ended up experiencing a feeling that was just as enjoyable, if not more. That doesn't mean everyone's going to do this. I'm not saying that you will have the same experience as I have, but you can't necessarily predict what's going to happen unless you have some special ability. You might, but I've seen that happen with a lot of people. My friend in Florida, when I lived in Florida, after he got divorced, he said, "I will never marry again." I can give you one guess what happened. He met someone and it turned out that they were very compatible. And he didn't think he would ever get married again. Yet here's this woman that comes into his life and she is perfect for him. And he'd never thought it would happen because the marriage he had was the only reference he had. I think that's important to know, is that how many references do you have in order for you to be qualified to say never, ever, or always? You have to have a lot of references. Even doctors who've seen thousands and thousands of the same condition or symptoms aren't willing to say, well, you're definitely going to die from this because everyone I've ever worked on has died. Even though they know it's true, they don't stop working on you. They don't stop trying to help you live and figure stuff out. I mean, most doctors, I hope, don't stop working on you. Don't stop trying to make you feel better, to get you to a better place, because not only do they have references that maybe this condition is fatal or it leads to something that is unavoidable, but they also have references that they've seen some really strange things happen. They've seen mind over matter stuff. They've seen people take drugs that suddenly cured them and worked differently in that person than they did in another person. So their realities have to be expanded to include a lot of possibilities. So it's a good lesson for all of us to just realize that we don't know the future, that we can't necessarily say never, or at least we shouldn't limit ourselves to the words never and always, unless it serves you. If you say, "I'm always happier after I get out of a toxic relationship," that could be a serving belief. That could be a serving comment to say about your life. That way, when you're in a toxic relationship and you feel like you need to end it, you can have some sort of comment like that that serves you, that says, when I get out of a toxic relationship, I'm always happier. Now, hopefully you're not always in toxic relationships, but when you're in one, it would be great to know, to have this belief that you will be happier when you're not in one. That kind of commentary does help, I believe. And that is sort of like self-affirming. Even though you don't know the future, what kind of future do you really want? And that comes back to creating your model of reality, or at least shaping it a little bit, where you say, "I'm never going to be happy again." Is that the model of reality that you want? Because if it isn't, then by saying it, you are helping to shape it. Because what you're saying is that there's no chance, so I'm not going to keep my mind open, so I'm just going to stay in this more miserable, more disappointed state because I know it's never going to come true. That just doesn't feel right to me. It just doesn't seem like it has any useful purpose, unless it does. If it motivates you to do something about it, if you say, "I'll never be happy again," and it motivates you to go out and do something about it, then I see that as serving you. I like to use the word serve. If something serves you, if something benefits you, if you don't like those words, you can choose something else. But I like to ask, okay, does this belief serve me? Does this perception of the world serve me? Because if it doesn't, why am I keeping it? Well, it might be true. I mean, that'll be my inner dialogue. Because it's true. Because you know it's true. Because she was the best person that'll ever happen to you. And you know it's true that you'll never find someone else like that. And that little devil's voice that comes in my mind, I can say, what? Where are you getting this information? I can start questioning that little voice in my head and ask, where are you getting this information? Well, I've been around the block and I have not seen anything but this miserable place, and it's never going to get better. So what you're saying is that you've had these experiences before and they haven't gotten better before, so they obviously will never get better. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Now you understand. Now you believe me. We convince ourselves because we have no reference to the contrary. And when we don't have a reference to the contrary, it's easy to convince ourselves that it will always be that way. And I'm here to say that it's not. And that's a bold statement because somebody's going to write to me and say, Paul, I was told I would never walk again, and I know it's true. And I'm not going to argue with that. You may have no legs and you may not be able to walk again. And I understand that. And I absolutely sympathize and agree with you that that is true. But what you're stating there is a current reality, a substantial, tangible reality. You know it and I know it. You probably, I mean, I can't say never, maybe technology will change, but you probably won't grow your legs back. Now, technology can help you walk in different ways. Hopefully, maybe, you know, I don't know your situation, if that's you, but we have to consider what is not tangible. What is not tangible is, hey, it happened in the past. This is how it'll always be. That's not tangible. That is hypothesis that it could happen, but can you follow that up with a never or an always? And that's my point, is that we cannot necessarily convince ourselves that something will always be or never be because we do not have the crystal ball to do so. In science, sometimes we can. It'll never happen that way. But then science is designed to test that over and over again. We'll never put a man on the moon. It'll never happen. And then science tests it until they make it happen. And I like that. I like the idea that we can actually test and challenge and push our beliefs into the stratosphere and accomplish something that we deemed impossible at one time, because that can work at the micro level on ourselves. That can work at the micro level in our own life, where we make decisions every single day that we can either choose to believe that something good actually might happen or choose to continue to believe that it will never happen. And when we put that never on, and that never makes us feel bad, doesn't serve us, doesn't benefit us, then what we do is set ourselves up for continual disappointment. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you a little story and then read someone's email and talk about this a little bit more. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Let me tell you a quick story about a job I had in the 90s. This was a job that was perfect. I mean, this was the perfect job. I went in at an early time, which I didn't like, but I got out at an early time, which I did like. The pay was low, which I didn't like, but the type of work I did like. And so there were many aspects of the job that I loved, even though it didn't really have the greatest wake-up time and very low pay. But I remember it being one of the best jobs I've ever had. And when I think back, I remember that, wow, that job had the perfect set of criteria. That was one of the best jobs I'd ever had, one of the most fun times of my life, and one of the most satisfying work positions I'd ever held at any company. So after I left that job, no job compared to that, not for a while at least. And no job compared, because I didn't know why I liked that job. I mean, I knew the specific practical reasons, like not having to worry about not being able to fix someone's problem, because when they called, it was like a customer service type job, but in technology. When they called, if I couldn't handle the problem myself, I could pass it on to somebody who could. And that was great. It felt so good not being the end of the line. And I remember being promoted in that position and becoming the end of the line and eventually hating that job. But that position I was in, I loved. So many, many years and many other jobs later, I'd never found something like that. And, you know, I could look back and think to myself, I'll never find a job like this again. This is perfect. And I could find many reasons that was true. And in hindsight, I could look at all the jobs I had and say, hey, that was true. But it wasn't until I started working at the hospital in Oregon. I had an IT job in Oregon that I held for, like a year, year and a half. And there was something I really liked about that job, many things that I really liked about that job too. And I thought, wow, this is great. I could do this for the rest of my life. This is so much fun. And it brought me back to that time when I was working for that other job. And it made me consider what exactly was fun or enjoyable or satisfying about that job. And this is where I'm going with this, is that sometimes we have a job or a relationship or we're in a situation that gives us certain thoughts and feelings that we appreciate. Because when we experience something that we enjoy, that we even love, that we like how we feel and we like how we think, like I was saying in the last segment, you like how you feel or you liked how you felt when you were with that person or in that job. But I wanted to explore that, why I liked this other job at the hospital. And I asked myself an important question, which I think we should all ask ourselves this important question when it comes to something that we never think we'll have again that we want. And that question is, what about that did I enjoy? Or what about him or her did I love? And even further into that, if the job didn't have a title and it consisted of only the bigger picture of what you did, or if the person that I was dating or married to didn't have a name and it was a bigger picture of things that they did that made me feel good, would it matter if it was truly that job with that title or truly that person with that name? And let me explain that. After I was divorced, I asked myself the question because I was going through some pain and I needed healing and I knew I did. And I had some of these tools that I talk about on this show, but I didn't have this question until it just came to me one night. And I asked myself, okay, if I met someone that wasn't her, but was somebody else that was just as attractive, if not more, just as fun to be with, if not more, found me attractive, if not more, made me laugh just as much, if not more, and showed up in so many ways that was just as enjoyable, if not more, would it matter if it wasn't her? I mean, would it matter if it wasn't my wife? Because at the time, I wanted my wife back, and nobody else could take her place. Nobody. That was my thought. Never. It'll never happen. That generalization. But what I did was ask myself that question, okay, if this person showed up and she was all that and some, then would I be okay being in a relationship with that person? And I immediately said, well, of course. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. If that's true, then I don't necessarily want my wife back. And this is going to sound a little odd, so give me a second. I don't necessarily want my wife back. I want the way I felt back. I want who I was when I was with her. And, you know, I also had dysfunction back then, so I didn't want that part. But I wanted the good stuff back. I wanted the way I felt when I felt good back. And so I started separating the person, that person, from the feeling I wanted. And you can do this with almost anything. You can start to separate the job, the situation, the person with the feeling that you want. It's sort of like if I said, if you're not well off, if you don't have a lot of money and you're living paycheck to paycheck, what would you like to have happen? And you might say, well, I want more money. I want to make more money, or I want to inherit a large sum of money. Great. How would that make you feel to have that large sum of money? Oh my God, I feel so great. I could go on vacations. I don't have to work as hard, or I can just quit work altogether. Okay, great. So you go through that process. You go on your vacations. You quit work and you're retired. How does that feel? Oh my God, it feels so comfortable. It feels relaxed. And then I can ask you, okay, what about having enough money makes you feel that way? You might say, well, it gives me more options. I don't have to worry as much. I don't have to stress about not being able to pay bills. So if I told you that you don't have to stress, you don't have to worry, you could go on vacation, but you're not going to get any more money. Hear me out again. You're not going to get any more money, but you can have all the other stuff that having money does, but you wouldn't have any more of it. But you can have everything else to get that feeling, the comfortable, relaxed, peaceful, whatever feeling it is, but you wouldn't have any more money. Would you be okay with it? And I'd want you to consider it, really consider it. If you could feel exactly the same way, if not better, without having the money, but it's as if you do have the money because you have all these options now, you have the freedoms, would you be okay not actually having the money? So, you know, I go into a space of, wow, if I can have all those feelings, then I guess it wouldn't matter if I had the money or not, because that's what I'm trying to achieve. And that's another point I want to make, is that what you're trying to achieve may not necessarily be to be with that person or to get that thing or to get that specific job. What you're trying to achieve is what you want to feel inside so that you can feel that way again if you had ever felt that way. Or you can feel that way for the first time because I've never been happy or I've never been wealthy or well off. I've never been whatever. So I want to feel a certain way. Great. If I can help you achieve that. I mean, this is, you know, a scenario that I'm just running by you just to help your mind stretch a little bit. If I promised you that you would feel the exact same way, if not better, than you did then, would you consider getting into that situation or that job or that relationship, even though it's not that person or that job or that relationship? You know, you take out the label. Even though it's not Bill or Mary, even though it's not customer service or this or this, even though it's not living with that person or being friends with that person, even though it's not any of that stuff, but you could feel this way, would you be okay with that? Because if you said no, and let's go in that direction, if you said no, it would not be okay, it has to be her, or it has to be him, or it has to be that job, then what you're doing now is locking yourself in a little room and swallowing the key so nobody else can get in, so that you absolutely keep yourself miserable because you are attaching your emotional outcome to something that probably will never happen. You are setting yourself up for failure. You are setting yourself up to never be happy, because once you put all your eggs in that one basket, that it has to be that person, then you take all your options away and say, no, it has to be this way or no way at all. And you also take away the ability to feel any better ever again. There's that word ever. Then you automatically close off opportunities that can and will come your way because it is not structured in a way that you've defined it. And if you've defined it using a label, using that person's name, using that description, then that description limits your choice, limits your opportunity. The more descriptive you are, the more limiting it can be because you're looking for that specific thing. I have to have a 1986 red Lamborghini with the vehicle identification number of 18452. I mean, if you're so specific, it has to have 15R, whatever, 35 tires. I can't think of any tires. And there has to be a small rip in the carpet. And you probably have these very specific criteria. That's what we do, though, don't we? She has to have red hair. He has to have a mustache. He has to this. She has to that. When we do that, then we are narrowing our future into a tiny little tunnel or bubble or something that's so confining and so restrictive that we create a needle in the haystack effect. This has to be this way. This has to be the needle I want in this haystack. And I'm going to search my entire life until I find that specific thing. In the meantime, all these other opportunities are passing you by because you've got something specific in mind. Where I go with this is to tell you to remove the labels and consider what you need in order to feel the most fulfilled. And what that means is when I looked at what fulfilled me in my job, at least, you know, when I got this other job at the hospital, I realized that one of the things I needed could happen in many other jobs. Just like if you said to me, I want to be able to laugh in my relationship, and only that person made me laugh that hard. Well, I tell you what, there's a lot of people that will make you laugh that hard, if not harder, if you're open to it. Because if you consider that only that person did it, then you'll never find anyone else. And they won't have a chance because you've locked them out already. You've already shut the door on people that might actually be just as fun, if not more fun. And when I looked at that job and when I looked at my relationships and what was present then, I realized, wow, you know, I've been through so many jobs, I've been through so many relationships that the things I liked about both of those things had commonalities among all jobs and all relationships. You're able to find commonalities when you expand your mind to the point where you can start to see these other components of somebody or something that helps you gain an understanding of what you're really looking for. It doesn't have to be that person, place, or thing. It just has to be how you feel. Well, how do I get to that feeling? Well, this is where what you really appreciate about something or someone comes into play. You either write down or think about what you liked about that person, place, or thing. What did I like about setting up computers in a hospital? I liked that it was in chaos and I was able to come in and make it organized. That's a big picture thing. I like to think in big picture. I zoom out and I ask myself, what about that was enjoyable? Well, something about it being kind of a mess and then me coming in and cleaning it up really made me feel good. So that was one of the things. And another thing was, you know, I got to use computers and spreadsheets, and that might sound boring to someone else, but to me, it was exciting. And there's more and more that I discovered about the jobs and the relationship that I had. Like, for example, I liked being with somebody who liked sci-fi. And so it didn't have to be my ex-wife that I wanted back. It could be anyone that liked sci-fi. That would be a bonus. And she didn't have to like sci-fi. That wouldn't be a qualifier. It was just a bonus. But just that one thing gave us a connection. And when you find a connection, when you find something that you appreciate about someone or something, that connection expands into other areas that you may not even have considered. For example, I never considered that I would meet someone that was really intelligent in technology. I just figured, and maybe this is a old judgment or bias, that the women that I typically meet for a romantic relationship didn't really have too much technological background, so I didn't expect it. And then I met my current girlfriend, who knows more about building websites than I have ever dreamed of, and she has been a huge help in helping me with online stuff. But meeting her, that kind of connection really helped expand our connection in many ways. To be able to talk to each other and, you know, joke about that stuff, it is something I never expected, because my expectations were built on the premise of, oh, I want to meet someone who is A, B, C, and D. And if I had kept that criteria instead of just being open-minded and allowing any friendship to develop and blossom into a romantic relationship, if it went that way, if I just stayed open-minded and just continued being friends with people and whatever developed, then I would find out what would be a good relationship after all, instead of thinking to myself, no, it has to be A, B, C, and D, so I'm going to exclude all these other people. You never know until you be a little looser on your criteria, a little less stringent. I'm not saying you shouldn't have criteria, because I talk about values. You got to have values. Yes, they must not do this and they must do that. I don't want someone who, whatever, takes drugs or drinks or smokes, or I don't want someone who treats my children badly. I don't want someone who is emotionally disconnected. You know, you're going to have these criteria, and I absolutely say do not settle for anything less than that criteria. But don't make your criteria so stringent that they must love mysteries and they must love British humor. They must want to go to knitting circle with me and want, don't make it so stringent that you narrow your choices down to one other person in the world. And it just happens to be that person that you fell in love with 20 years ago, and you'll never find anyone else like that again. Remove some of these labels, expand your mind, keep it open. And remember, you never know what the future is going to bring. Not only will you probably be a different person in a few years, but you'll probably find that you desire different things and your desires change, and so do your tastes and what you find distasteful. Like, I used to believe that I always wanted a partner with short, dark hair. I thought, that's who I'm attracted to. That's my taste. I want someone with short, dark hair. And then I found someone with short, dark hair, and I thought she was attractive, and I tried to pick her up, and I got rejected. And then I told myself, well, I'm a failure here. This is the only other girl with short, dark hair that I've met that I even had a remote possibility with, and she said no. So I guess I'll have to wait another year or two or three or five or 10 and hope to find another one that I'm attracted to that has all this specific criteria. And when I took that criteria out, wasn't so stringent, and just allowed to be whatever would be, and just kept my mind open, suddenly somebody else came along. Suddenly I met my wife, you know, suddenly this, suddenly that. Because I took the label off. Didn't have to be dark hair. Because I believe that short dark hair made me feel good. I believe that short dark hair turned me on the most. I believe. You gotta take out these attachments and insert some more open thinking. Insert some more opportunity. So my last thought on this, I remember I told you I had an email to read. I'm going to read you a little bit of it during the outro, and we'll hit on some other points. But my last thought on this is, don't deceive yourself with the words never, ever, or always. I mean, I've met older people that really believed that their life was over because they lost the best thing in their life. And, you know, that hurts, and I know, and it's sad. But they also discovered a path that they never considered before and found a happiness that they didn't think was possible because of what I talked about here. That doesn't mean it's always going to happen to everyone. Yes, there are going to be relationships and jobs and situations that you get into that will be the best time of your life, that will give you the best feeling of your life. That is going to happen. And you can take that memory going, wow, I can't believe how much that changed my life. I really enjoyed that time in my life. But don't see it as a loss. See it as something that you got to experience at that time. Because there's so much more to experience in life. There really is. If you have any thoughts that this is it, this is the best that life gets, then I just want you to consider this one thing. Are you doing the things that you love to do? And I know some people have three jobs and they can never get to the things they love to do. But when you make the time to do something that you enjoy doing, even if it is your job, even if it is spending time with yourself, but when you make the time to do something that you enjoy doing, what happens is you run into people that also enjoy doing that. And this is something my girlfriend said that I'll never forget. She said, the best way to meet people is to do something you love without worrying about meeting people. And she said, the reason is because you'll meet people that are doing what they love, which just happens to be what you love to do. And I thought, okay, how does that work if you love meditating by yourself? And she said, well, you got to be around other people, of course, but sometimes you'll be meditating and the person that is also meditating on their own is sitting on a rock across the stream, and suddenly you make a connection and you didn't even try. And I love those types of connections. Those are the best kind of connections you can make, is when you're doing something, you're investing in yourself, you're investing in your own happiness and your own recreation, in your own joy of some sort. And suddenly you meet someone who's also doing that and you have a connection without even trying. Is that a real thing, or is that just a fantasy that you see in a movie? I don't know. Try it. Tell me. I mean, if you're in that space where you do want to meet someone, for example, I mean, this may not work with a job, but maybe it would. Maybe if you're doing something that you like to do and you're with other people that are doing something that they like to do, it could turn into an entrepreneurial venture or something. Who knows? The point is that you put effort into yourself and suddenly you're connecting with like-minded people, which gives you a better structure to live your life on this planet with other people that know what you're going through, that have a like-minded thought process that you actually enjoy being around because they enjoy doing what they're doing along with you. So I told my girlfriend, that's really insightful. And I'm going to use it on my show. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to another episode. We'll be right back. I'll say some thank yous and I'll read you some parts of that email regarding what I talked about today. Be right back after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank some people that have commented and left reviews in iTunes and other countries. And I don't get those reviews. I don't typically see them. I finally found a way to get them. But if you've left a review, thank you. Thank you for anyone that's left a review. Thank you for anyone that's taken the time to actually do that, good or bad, because I appreciate you no matter what. I also want to thank the newest members of the Patreon program, Liz and Bradley, and Michelle, did I thank you? I don't remember, but Michelle, thank you, and Jesse. Jesse just reached out to me. I want to say thank you. Thanks for checking in with me. Jesse decided to invest for the whole year. I appreciate you. And if you are learning something about yourself, about your relationships, if your life is improving in any way, and you feel this show is valuable, you can say thank you if you'd like, or you can go to the patron site and become a member at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. There's a couple options for being a supporting member of this show, and I definitely appreciate it. And of course, I give back. If you become a patron member, there's like 85, 86 episodes in there right now that no one's ever heard, or at least outside the patron program. And those are private episodes that I talk to patron members only. And of course, all the workbooks and worksheets that I offer there might be of interest to you. Check it out. patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And I want to tell you about the MEAN workbook. That's M-E-A-N, stands for Manipulation and Emotional Abuse Number. And what that means is if you're in any sort of difficult relationship, you know what a difficult relationship is, right? You come home from work and you say, hi, honey, and then they give you that look. And you're like, what is that look? Why are they giving me this look? And then you feel bad because you've seen that look before, and then you realize, oh, crap, I did something wrong. And that's not all difficult relationships. I mean, that can happen to all of us, but does it happen often? Does it happen a little too often? Like, you keep feeling like you're being blamed or put down or made fun of, or you feel like you're being isolated or alienated from friends and family. You feel like you're the only one that can see that you're feeling worse and worse and worse, yet your friends and family don't see it. I would call that a difficult relationship. I would call that you might be in perhaps an emotionally abusive relationship or a manipulative relationship, or just a relationship that really makes you think, wow, this should be easier. It should be easier. Why do I feel bad all the time? I want you to consider going to loveandabuse.com and see if the MEAN workbook might be able to help you out, because it is a 200-point assessment that narrows down exactly what's happening in your relationship, because, you know, when it really is emotional abuse, most people don't know it. Most people don't want to even admit that there is abuse in their relationship. It's just a term. It may not be intentional abuse. It may not be abuse at all, but this assessment really narrows down what's happening specifically and lets you know exactly what you can do about it too. You know, once you know what's happening, that's like the light bulb in a dark room. I mean, you turn on the light bulb and you see everything. Oh, that's what I needed to know. Once you know it, then you have something to work with. Because when you're in a relationship that's just so difficult, you can't figure out why, it's hard to work with anything. You don't know where to start. This is a great start and a great resource for you if you're in that situation. So check it out. Go to loveandabuse.com if you're in any type of difficult relationship, and see if that helps you. And thank you to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. Like I said, I'm going to read you parts of this email. This is somebody that wrote to me way back in March, and this show is now being aired on Sunday, 8/26/2018. So March of 2018, it's been several months. It was March? It might have been a little later, but several months. And they wrote, and I finally got to write back last week and asked them, hey, is their situation the same? Is it different? And it was about their relationship and what they're going through. And this person I'm going to call Joe. I'm just going to read bits and pieces of this reply email he gave to me just yesterday. He said his therapist is teaching him about attachment theory and allowing him to see that while I didn't initiate the breakup, he went through a breakup, I played a huge part in the demise of the relationship. I have an anxious attachment style, and she's got an avoidant attachment style, and the two don't work together. And then he said, working with my therapist is giving me the opportunity to learn how to effectively communicate with people in order to reach a mutually desired outcome, something my ex and I never did. I've spent months beating myself up about the relationship and regretting most things that I did. When she left, she told me that it was me who ruined us. But now I'm beginning to understand that I have behaved in a manner that I thought was correct. And had I been equipped with the knowledge that I have now, I'm sure things would have been dramatically different. But I didn't know any of these things, so I can't blame myself for that. That's right, Joe. You can't blame yourself when you don't know what you don't know. And learning these tools later on really gives you some great insights about the past. So I'm glad to hear this. And Joe said a couple more things here. Although I'm very still much in the headspace of missing my ex and missing the relationship and thinking it was the most amazing thing ever, I'm able to now look back and see the things that were wrong with it and also see how insecure and anxious it made me. And I also see how intertwined we were with each other in each other's lives and not in a healthy way. I became a weak person that could only operate when given instructions by my ex. That's such an important point to make, Joe. I'm just reading some of this stuff because I want everyone listening to really absorb what's going on here, because you realized these things were happening in your relationship, but only after the fact, only after you went to a therapist. And now you can look back and see what's wrong with it. And I think that's such a vital point, because when you're in it, you don't necessarily see what's wrong with things. Because, and especially, you don't really see your role. I mean, a lot of the times, you don't really see your role in everything that's happening. And you see that you were insecure and you were anxious. And even though you missed this relationship, I can almost guarantee you that you would tell me that you don't miss these things about it. You don't miss how insecure and anxious you felt. You don't miss necessarily being intertwined to the point where you felt weak and you could only operate given instructions by your ex. I can't imagine that would empower you. So the reason I wanted to read that part especially and emphasize it here is that when we think about, oh, I want that relationship back so badly, you get everything with the relationship. You get exactly what you had then. Yes, you can learn your lessons. Yes, you can heal and grow and get to a better space in yourself. And when that happens, you might be able to meet your ex at a different place and get along a lot better. It does happen. But did they also heal and grow? Did they also get to a better place in themselves? Because if they didn't, then some old stuff can come up. And it usually does. If they're not in that different space and you are, or neither of you are in that different space, then getting a relationship back that had things like this in it will repeat the same old stuff. And I know what it feels like. You feel like, okay, I'm not going to make the same mistakes. But unless you've gone through any sort of transformation or healing or growing and really come into a new space and really feel different about the way you were and the way she was or the way he was or whatever relationship you're in, when you feel different and you think about that old stuff and it doesn't trigger you the way it used to, then things can really change for the better. But when you just want the relationship you had, you got to remember all the hard stuff comes with it. Unless there's been some huge shift for both of you that you can meet from a new place. And I'm not trying to say that there aren't exceptions. There definitely are. But you just have to remember that when you want something back, you get everything that came with it. And if either of you felt unhappy more than you felt happy in the relationship, then it just won't work. Yes, one person can feel more happy, the other person can feel less happy. That doesn't work. That's not a balance. If you're both coming in to the relationship and you can both feel more happy than you feel unhappy, then it can work. But remember, bringing that old relationship back where there was an imbalance of some sort, it's going to create typically that same imbalance. Let's see, I'm going to read a couple more things here. I've been on numerous dates in an attempt to fulfill my anxious attachment, but none of them have fulfilled me, nor have they been up to my standards. I've just felt very desperate. The desperation still lingers, but it is getting better. And I'm sure that with time, it will pass. I hope. And right there, Joe, I read that not because I have any type of comment on it for you, but for anyone listening, Joe has been through a lot and his heart has been aching for months and months and months. Yet he has this comment of, I've just felt desperate. It's still there. It lingers, but it's getting better. This is what happens. Even in the thick of it, when you're experiencing the worst of it, the next day, one of those days, you start to feel a little better. And this is why it's so important. Like when I hear from people that feel like, you know, getting themselves off this planet, you know, committing suicide. When I talk to people in that space, I like to find out if they're in a foggy place. Because if they're in this foggy, depressed, unhappy space, then they're making decisions from a space where they're not clear. Where they're just, if you're making decisions like that in a foggy place, that's a permanent decision. You should never make permanent decisions from a foggy place. You should always make those decisions after some time has passed, after a long time sometimes. You know, a year, 2 years, 3 years. You got to wait this out and see if the needle is moving. Is the needle moving? Is the trend line going up and to the right where I'm getting a little better each and every day? Or at least each and every week or each and every month, am I getting a little bit better? Because if you are, that is momentum. Even though it doesn't feel like it, it's still a little bit better than last time. And it's very important to keep that in mind. You always want to continue getting a little bit better, a little bit better. And yes, talking to people, getting professional help, expressing yourself, expressing your pain and your shame and your guilt and your embarrassments and your humiliations, expressing all of this stuff to someone you trust is also helpful and gets you there typically faster. So I love that it is getting better for you. And I know it's slow and I know you want it to go faster, but thank you for sharing that because I've shared it with the world now and the world needs to know that it does get better. And you've been through it. I've been through it. We've all been through some sort of hardship that we thought wouldn't get better, but it does. And if you're in that space where it just hasn't gotten better, then maybe it is time to talk to someone. Maybe it is time to reach out to someone. It's definitely time to find people that you trust so that you can express this stuff. Because keeping it in typically doesn't work. Anyway, let me finish your email here, Joe. And you say, all that said, there are two things that I can't seem to get out of my head. One, the thought that I'll ever find someone as good as her again. Someone that makes me laugh. Someone that's soppy and lovable, someone that I'm truly sexually compatible with. Joe, the answer to number one is everything I've talked about in this episode, is that we put ourselves in this place of, I'll never find this type of person again. How am I ever going to find that type of person again? I truly believe that with every single relationship I went through. And you told me your age. I think it's coming at number two. You actually say you're in your 20s. And I've learned that for a lot of people, the earlier you break up in life, the earlier you're in love and then you have some sort of disaster, some sort of breakup or someone leaves or someone dies, the earlier that happens, the closer you are to birth as opposed to being an old person, being a senior citizen, it seems to me the harder it is to handle, not saying it's not hard when you're older, and the more of an impact it has in your life, and the more you believe you can't handle it. And I believe that is because you haven't had enough life experience yet to be resilient or, I don't want to say tolerant, but have the necessary tools. I mean, you build these tools by going through what you're going through now. Because as you get older, you have a different tool for breaking up later on. It doesn't get easier. I'm not saying it's going to get easier, but you will find more creative, productive ways to deal with this stuff. When you're in your 20s, you don't have all these life experience tools. When you're in your 40s, you do. I mean, sometimes. Some people have the same relationship for 20, 30, 50 years, and they have to learn those tools at an older age. And that is tough. You know, I speak from a place where I've had several breakups in my life, several heartbreaks, and they're painful, but each time it got a little bit better because I understood myself more, I gathered more tools. But this is why I encourage people to imagine what it's like if your life changed suddenly. Like I ask my clients that have been in long-term relationships, okay, so imagine your partner left and you woke up the next morning and he or she wasn't there. What's your first thing? What are you going to do first? And what are you going to do second? And what's going to happen in a week? Where are you going to be in a month? Where are you going to be in a year? I have them go through this visualization process, not to prepare them to break up. That's not my goal. It might end up where they are or it might not. but to help them access resources that they may not have yet, that they may not have created yet, because they don't know any other life. And when you start accessing and visualizing this stuff, you start to create tools and resources that you might need someday, hopefully never, but you might need them. It prepares you a little bit. It's just a visualization. It's not the real thing, but it really starts putting you through the paces. It really starts expanding your mind so that you have something from which to draw when and if that occurs. So I really appreciate the process of thinking, okay, well, what would happen if that happened? Just like if I thought to myself, okay, what if I became homeless again? What would happen then? What would I do? What if I couldn't go stay with my mom? What if I couldn't go stay with my family? What would I do then? What if I lost my vehicle? What if I lost, you know, everything? And some of the thoughts are unpleasant, but some of the thoughts are relieving, knowing that, oh, there are systems in place that will help me. Well, am I ready to do that again? Am I ready to go through that whole process? And, you know, where do you go with that? And that's really good practice. But anyway, I just wanted to say that don't put yourself in that never space, because you'll be surprised when somebody or something comes along that when you're investing in yourself, that they're investing in themselves too. And suddenly there's a connection or attraction, or at least the beginning of a friendship. So you really don't know. Just don't set yourself up to be disappointed and miserable. Set yourself up to believe that, hey, it happened once, it can happen again. And number two, you write, I'm very scared to get into a new relationship. It's never been a fear of mine before, but I worry about being cheated on. I worry that I'm never going to be able to maintain a truly lasting, meaningful relationship. And I'm also worried that I'm too old. And he said, in my 20s, that's ridiculous. So he even admits that even though I'm in my 20s, I feel like I'm too old. Well, let me answer that last part. I am 48 and I met my girlfriend when I was, how long ago? 44? 4 years ago? 5 years ago? 43, I think. So we met when I was 43, but she was also in her 40s. So when you say too old, if you're talking about I'm too old for women that are 10 years younger than me, maybe, maybe you are. Because if I said, well, I just want to meet 20-year-olds, then I'm probably too old for that. However, what you find is potential partners out there that are also thinking I'm too old. Oh, wait. I found someone that's around my age. I guess I'm not too old. I'm perfect. So I want to help you just reconcile this in your mind, that you're never too old to find someone else. You'll just find someone that also thinks they're too old or not, but you'll find someone because we all age. And as long as you're sort of looking in that age range, you'll never have a problem. But if you tell me, well, I only appreciate 20-year-olds, and that's all I'll ever appreciate, well, then it gets a little bit more difficult. You narrow that scope of opportunity down to just very limited 20-year-old people that appreciate older people. I don't know how many there are out there, but maybe there's a lot. But let me just share this with you. When I was in my 20s, I thought of 40-year-olds as really old. And now that I'm in my 40s, nearing 50, I look at the romantic partners that I would have to choose from nowadays, and I appreciate that they're in their 40s. I appreciate that they're in my age range. And I look at the personality differences between me and perhaps a 20, 22, whatever-year-old woman. And I think, well, I don't know if we'd get along that well unless she was a really old soul. And I have these thoughts. But I never think, oh, I'm too old, because I'm going to find people that are my age. So unless you're qualifying too old as you only need young potential partners, then you're okay. Now, if you do only prefer young, then, like I said, you'll be limited. But never think you're too old, because that just doesn't really apply, because you're going to find hundreds of thousands of people that are in the age range that they're looking for someone in your age range too. Now, maybe you didn't mean that. Maybe you meant I'm too old to start a family or to do something else. And still, that doesn't apply. I don't know if I can convince you of that, because maybe you think 29 is too old because maybe maybe your dad died young or something. Where is that too old coming from? Too old for what? When you have that thought, whose voice is it in? Is it in your voice? I mean, too old for what? Too old to get married? Like I said, you haven't had that much life experience yet. And when you're 39, you can look back and go, oh, well, 10 years have gone by and I've had this relationship or this job and everything seems okay now. I seem to have gotten by just fine, so I guess I wasn't too old. You just don't know it until you experience it. So I'm here to say that you're never too old and that life can start wherever you are. So don't worry about that too much. That's just my two cents there. As for your other comment, I'm very scared to get into a relationship. It's never been a fear of mine before, but I worry about being cheated on, and I worry that I'm never going to be able to maintain a truly lasting, meaningful relationship. Here's what I'm going to say about that. Treat every connection as a friendship and nothing more. For now. You know, you treat the people that you connect with as somebody you just want to get to know. Just treat them as somebody you want to get to know. And don't have this attachment style that you're talking about. Don't have this anxious attachment. Oh, they've got to like me. And if they like me, we got to have a relationship. You got to start treating these people as friends that could be friends for a long time. And it doesn't mean you will be. It just means that, hey, I just want to get to know you. Tell me about you. Tell me about your life. Tell me your likes and your dislikes. Let me get to know you without being concerned that you're going to be in a relationship. I tell you what, the best thing that happened between my girlfriend and I is that we were friends without the possibility of dating. That was one benefit of being long distance, is that we met long distance. We were 1,000 miles apart. And when we met, I was choosing not to date anymore. And she liked that I wasn't trying to pick her up. And I was just being honest, because when you're not trying to pick someone up, you typically are more honest, or at least I am. and I didn't have to put out any false fronts. I was just being me. And I was telling her all the good, the bad, and the ugly about me. I even tried to be repelling so she didn't find me, whatever, attractive or dating material. And I don't mean that, but I just meant that I was just being my full self, my full authentic self. And we got along for months, wonderfully, as friends. There was never any thought of dating until there was. But that took some time. And there's nothing wrong with going out on a, quote, date with somebody and just making a friend. There's nothing wrong with that. And if it turns into something else and you do have fears that kick in, you talk about them. You talk about these fears. You know, I'm afraid to get into a relationship because I have this irrational fear that I'll be cheated on. And I don't know where that comes from. Or maybe I do know where that comes from. And I just don't want to date people. I mean, you actually tell these truths and maybe you'll scare some people off and maybe you won't. But you just tell your truth. You just put it out there, because one of the worst things you can do for anxiety is keep things in and hold back and hope that the other person never realizes that you're thinking that. That's the worst thing you can do for anxiety. One of the best things you can do for anxiety is express, hey, I'm having anxiety. I'm feeling this anxiety and this is why. I'm feeling afraid to get into a relationship. Even sitting here talking to you, I feel anxious because I feel like an idiot, or I feel ugly, or I feel like you're going to look at my teeth and laugh, or my hair, and, you know, whatever the anxiety is about. You bring it up because this helps connect you with what you're holding back. And when you're holding stuff back, it keeps you in the anxious state. But when you bring it up and bring it out, a lot of the times the other person feels free to be themselves too. They might say, yeah, I've been anxious too. Or I'm nervous on this date too, or whatever it is. And you can even say, I don't even know if I'm ready to date. I don't even know if I'm dating material. And that could be your truth. And what's the worst that can happen? Well, I want someone who is ready to date, and I'm not ready to hear all this truth stuff. I want somebody who makes me feel good by telling me what I want to hear. And would you want that type of person in your life? I don't know. I wouldn't. I would want somebody who goes, wow, that's really honest. Thank you for sharing that with me. I'm glad you respect me enough to tell me the truth. That's the kind of person I want. That's why I don't mind sharing truths, sharing what I feel is might be ugly inside of me. When you do that and the person sticks around and actually appreciates the honesty, then you know you found someone special. Then you know that they're going to stick with you through a lot of stuff. That's why I like going into any possible romantic connection as, hey, this could be a good friend, instead of, hey, I hope this is the one. I hope this is it. Because as soon as you put that on, now you have expectations. Now you're putting pressure on the situation. Instead of just telling yourself, hey, this could be a friendship. This may not work at all. I just want to show that I'm interested in learning more about her. And if she wants to do the same thing with me, then maybe it'll grow into something. Maybe it won't. But that is part of letting go of the outcome, letting go of the expectations. And I realize that is a whole nother episode in itself. So I want to thank you, Joe. Thank you so much for writing. I hope this episode has helped you. And anyone listening today, I hope this has helped you as well. And thank you again, Joe, for inspiring this episode, because I think it's an important topic. And no matter what, if you leave with anything today, I want you to leave with this. Keep an open mind so that you can step into your power. This will help you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you are amazing.